There are five subjects that the Buddha recommended that we recollect frequently. We have a copy of them in our chanting, but we haven't chanted them yet. They're very simple. I can just read them. I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. Just give me a quick show of hands. How many people here are 50 over? Yeah. So actually, I think I'm one of the youngest. Who is less than 40? 1, 2, 3. Okay. I turned 40 yesterday. So some of us are studying aging, aren't we? More pain than before? Yeah, and if something gets damaged or stretched or take longer to heal than before? Yeah. So contemplating truth, nature, this is normal, it's not a problem. We just have to pay attention and understand this is the truth. Next one. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. So that just comes with a body. You have a body. Your body is subject to illness. Next one. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. So the Buddha says from the moment of birth we walk with death. So it's not that death is something that occurs at the end of one's life in 1 second. It's actually, the Buddha says we walk with it. They come as a pair. Where there is birth, there is death. And then the next one. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And the last one, I am the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, born of my karma, abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, of that I will be the heir. So, if one isn't a meditator and one reads these five reflections, afterwards there's kind of a feeling of aging, sickness, death, everything I love, separation. And if I do stupid things, I'm going to suffer. And then it's important to see this in context. The Buddha can be likened to a master physician. He's the doctor. And if he says this is the medicine, then there's a very good reason. You remember that Prince Siddhartha, handsome, very skilled, very talented, living in a palace, and servants. And it was when he left the palace with his driver, and he saw the sick person for the first time in his life, the legend goes. And being very sensitive and very reflective, because he has a lot of accumulated parami, this struck him very deeply, and he asked his driver, "What is that?" The driver said, "This is sickness." And he says, "Is that going to happen to me too?" And the driver says, "Yeah, everyone at some point will experience sickness." And then he said the vanity of health left him, so he no longer had the assumption that he will always be healthy. This is very important, that one of the reasons that we reflect on these things, I think it's like an investment in being ready and being able to deal with the various challenges that life will present. Because in affluent countries where there's health care, we begin to have an assumption almost that we have a right to health. And that when things go wrong, that's something that happens to other people. And so one of the things when it's a little bit depressing to contemplate it when we're healthy, but it's very important. Because you understand, or we have to understand, that sickness comes with health. They go together. just as there is a day and a night, summer and winter, where you have health, you have to have sickness. They come together, that's the human state, the human predicament. It's the same for animals. So if we just accept this, it has several good effects. One is that being aware that we can become sick, we might be a little more careful about what we eat and how we treat our bodies, try to take care of our health and our good human opportunity. And, because junk food is delicious and it's convenient, but it does make people sick. So if we reflect on it when we're in our 30s and our 40s before we get diabetes, it's very helpful. And the aging, we were talking about that yesterday, we were taking the precepts, aging's the first one actually, that sense of if we're accepting it before it happens, then we won't have so much grief about it. So there is a grieving process, isn't there, when one's youth has faded. That's when we realize that actually I was attached to that. And I remember just noticing in myself at my late 20s that sense of, because when I was 22, I remember attending my sister's 30th birthday and I remember thinking, oh, she's old. I remember thinking it's all over for her. And then I remember in my late 20s there was some grief. There was that sense, that's it. The bud of youth has blossomed. It's never going to be the same. And then I thought I grieved it, but then I remember I noticed coming towards 40, there's like another layer of attachment. Okay, it's like you're not quite old, but definitely not young. And that sense of, okay, getting used to the terrain of the middle-aged. And then I'm sure it's the same as one at 50 and 60, there's another threshold, another letting go, which is good. But if we contemplate it beforehand, it's not going to be as traumatic, it's not going to be as much grief if we're just allowing an acceptance. It's the same as sickness comes with health, age comes with youth, they go together. And the next one, of course, death comes with birth. The important thing about death and the important thing about reflecting on death daily is so that if it does occur today, this is very important. Death contemplation is important for many reasons and on many levels. One is it's preparing the mind to have deep insight into impermanence, because we're most deeply attached to this body. It's probably our biggest attachment. So just contemplating on the fact that it's going to die, the body's going to die, it has to, there's no way around it. And you see all these people, some really rich people have their old bodies frozen and they're hoping that future technology will be able to wake them up and make them youthful again. It's kind of a symbol of this attachment. And I don't think it's going to happen. We have to accept that the body is of the nature to die. It's not just bodies actually, it's every condition has a nature to arise, stay for some time and cease. And the body is a very obvious meditation object. We can contemplate this body very clearly and just ask yourself, is this body going to die? And you ask very sincerely and you have to acknowledge, yeah, it will. And it's very important to acknowledge that. Preparing the mind for insight, weakening the identification with the body to some degree. Then the other thing is, if you do die, that there isn't that sense of not being prepared. As I've discussed with Thanajana Nun, what are the factors that contribute to a good rebirth and or a difficult rebirth? And it says it's a combination of several things. One is the kind of karma that one has accumulated over the lifetime, kind of the level of the mind. So if the mind has mostly been on a human level, it'll tend to go towards the human. That means keeping five precepts. If one has kept five precepts, meditated a lot, been very generous, this is more of a deva level mind. If one hasn't kept five precepts most of the time and hasn't been generous, Ajahn Nun says, not really realistic to expect to be born as a human being, because the mind was actually at a level lower than human a lot of the time. But he says the other important thing is the quality of the mind at the moment of death. So this is, you know, whatever the consciousness, the level that consciousness is at that moment. So if we're not prepared for death, and we have a very serious reaction of fear, or rejection, or denial, or just aversion, I don't want to die. Not now. No. This isn't a good way to go. So if the mind dies with a lot of irritation, a lot of aversion, a lot of fear, very difficult to get a good rebirth. So this is one of the things why I think on many levels contemplating death is very valuable, necessary. And then we do have to, it's a good question to ask yourself, because there's this assumption, I think we all assume that we'll live to 70, 75, 80, 85, 90. That's an assumption. But of course, that's not realistic. Some people die in the womb. Some people die in childhood. Many people die in car accidents in their 20s. Some people all of a sudden get cancer at 30. And we all know, by now we all know examples of friends, relatives, that this happened to. So the assumption that we'll live to be 80 or 90 is not realistic. It's not tenable. So it's good to challenge it, and it's just to contemplate and then ask oneself, okay, is it possible? Could I die today? And then just accept that, yeah, I could. Especially in cars, even if I'm really, really careful, I don't have control over other drivers. So there's always a risk. In general, the modern world, there's really a lot of weapons stockpiled in various parts of the world, and a lot of nuclear reactors. We had a horrible event in Japan, very serious, from just one earthquake. So, you know, these kind of things, the potential causes for mass disasters on the planet at the moment, there's a lot, unfortunately. And I don't mean to be depressing. These reflections are more about being sober and more about being realistic and more about being prepared. That's why we do these reflections. So that if the time comes where we are sick, we can accept it and work with it as best as we can. If the time comes to die, accept that and work with that as best as we can. Then the other one, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. It's a shocking reflection. It doesn't say some of the things that are mine will sometimes be separated from me. It says all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become separated from me. So that's it's true, and it's very profound. So that can mean being separated from health. It can mean being separated from one's children, one's loved ones, one's parents. It can mean that your business fails. It can mean that the economy crashes. It can mean that even the value of gold changes. You know, it means that things change and that there's no real security in the world and in things. And that we need to have contemplated this a little bit so that if it happens, there isn't just an attitude of intense irritation, anger, resentment. There's a mind that can accept the truth, and it's almost as if something happens and there's a sense of, well, I knew that could happen. I was aware that this could happen. And then whatever the challenges are that do ripen in our lives, and we're practicing with them. Last one, karma. This is very helpful in establishing equanimity for the various challenges in our lives. Suppose that the difficult people in our lives, the ones that say things which hurt our feelings, the ones which don't say things that we would like them to say, the particular challenges that arise in our family, in our work, even our health problems, the state of the society, what seems not fair. We're born into the position that we're born in because of karma, and the degree to which it is benevolent, supportive, is the degree to which we've been skillful in the past. And the degree to which there are challenges is the degree to which we've been unskillful. And then I think it's just also good to know, in terms of this age, what one can expect. So this is often referred to as the degenerate age. It's when, in general, things are getting a bit worse, and in some cases a lot worse. So it's good to have a sense of perspective and context of where we are in this point of the eon. So this Buddha came when things were going from good to worse. That's when he came. There's a kind of a theme, and this is related to the group karma of the 6 billion people who are here. So of course, those of us who have contact with the Buddha's teachings, obviously there's a lot of accumulated merit, and many of us living a kind of a middle class, with a middle class abundance since childhood, this is also the result of merit, because most people on the world at this point in time don't live with that entitlement. This is a result of being very generous. But even people with merit, having met the Buddha's teachings and living in an abundant situation, we still live on the same planet as everyone else. And if a lot of the people on the planet at this particular point in time haven't been very generous and haven't been very ethical, and more of these people being born on this realm at the moment, then there's going to be some very serious challenges for human society. And I think it's important to have reflected on this and in some degree to be ready or to expect some... we shouldn't be expecting that everything's going to be better, I can put it that way. And we have to... we can be optimistic. Hopefully we have a long time to practice, but we don't know. And you just look at these... you look at the general state of the world. Not very much forest left. And although we know about the danger of carbon emissions, even so, each year there's more and more. And then, so there's no immediate threat of nuclear war, but there are a lot of nuclear bombs. And then the nuclear power reactors. There's just a lot of not very thoughtful, not very wise decisions have been made. And so there's some very serious threats to the ecosystem, to human civilization. At the same time, the Buddha's teachings exist in the world. They're here now. And enlightened beings are still in the world. And this is probably why most of those nuclear bombs haven't gone off. There are certain powerful forces which are helping to keep the human realm as a human realm. And so all of the practice that we do does contribute, actually. Those people who are consciously virtuous, those people who meditate, those people who dedicate their merit. This also helps the world to not descend into complete chaos. But as I said, it's not a sure thing. So obviously we all have a lot of good karma. But in samsara and in the human realm, it only gets so good. So when and if things change dramatically, there has to be that part of our mind that has contemplated the possibility, and we have to be able to say, well, I knew this was one possibility, I knew this could happen. And then we practice with that to the best of our ability. And whether we have reflected on it deeply will be a factor in how much patience we can bring to a challenging circumstance. So it's very important, because it's okay, you know, we don't make a lot of bad karma when things are going okay. But if you turn up the level of the frustration, turn up the level of the fear, turn up the level of the irritation, and then we're at risk. Once things are difficult past a certain point, we can start to lose our temper, start to become greedy, want to grab what we can grab, even if that means taking it from others. So we have to do some preparation so that when things get tough, we continue to behave at least like human beings, preferably like devas. So you remember also that the Buddha, in seeing aging, and in seeing death, and in seeing sickness, and also in seeing a monk, that these things helped him focus. These were the things that ripened his mindfulness and wisdom. He said, oh, the world is dangerous. There's a danger in samsara. And these are the things which stimulated his heroic efforts. So this is another reason for the Buddha's suggesting these reflections, is this helps us to focus. So at an initial glance it's depressing, but as you hear the message, receive the message, meditate on that message, and then get to work cultivating a refuge which is more dependable, then there are rewards, very deep rewards, that sense of having a refuge, that sense of having mindfulness and wisdom, being careful about the karma that one makes and consciously making a lot of good karma, and then feeling confident that in the future there will be more good opportunities. Having used the good opportunities of this life and having consciously made good karma, one can feel confident. I am the owner of my karma, heir to my karma, so in the future also I will be the owner of this karma, I will be the heir to this karma. All of the good karma I make will support me, and especially in terms of Buddhist practice, if one practices sincerely, then I think it is realistic to think that one will have opportunities to keep practicing. So very important to... And then one thing I'd like to suggest is at the moment of death and preparing up to it, we can rehearse it, we can practice it. I think one doesn't need to be too specific about where one hopes to be reborn. I don't think you should say, may I be born in Malaysia again, or may I be born in Thailand again. It's like, what I would suggest is that you set the deep intention. My intention is to practice Buddha Dhamma. May I be reborn in a place where I can practice the Buddha Dhamma. Just that much, because it's easy to remember, and it's a very sincere aspiration, and then you don't need to worry about the details. But when you dedicate the merit, and you think about the future a little bit, and you have this very clear intention, I intend to practice Buddha Dhamma until enlightenment. May I never be separated from the opportunity in all of my lives, may I be able to practice Buddha Dhamma. You just set that as a very powerful and clear intention. Probably talked a bit too much, but helping us to focus. So now we have this excellent intention to practice. And excellent opportunity, many more sessions, so really applying ourselves to generate this mindfulness and really be with those changes, training the mind to see anicca, be with anicca, understand the truth, be with the truth as it is, moment by moment, resting in mindfulness.